It's the morning show. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Kate Archer-Kent this morning. And the Wisconsin DMV is eliminating a waiver program that had allowed teenagers to avoid in-person road driving tests under certain conditions. We hear about the change from the agency's top official this morning, and you can join our conversation by calling in with your questions or comments about the DMV at any time. 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email us ideas@wpr.org. Our guest, Tommy Winkler. He is the administrator of the State Division of Motor Vehicles. He was appointed to the role this past October. Tommy, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks for having me.
Let's start with the new rules for the new year. The waiver that allowed 16 and 17-year-olds to avoid taking those in-person road tests has now expired beginning January 1st. Do we know how many young drivers took advantage of that waiver?
Yes, we do. So the waiver began back in May of 2020 as part of the COVID-19 pandemic. We implemented this pilot program. We've had 171,800 young drivers who have taken advantage of that waiver. They completed their driver's education requirements, behind the wheel requirements. They had no moving violations, and their sponsor, typically their parent or guardian, waived that road test. So 171,000, almost 800 drivers took advantage of that.
So considering that number, do we know what impact, if any, this has had on road safety in Wisconsin?
Yes, it's an excellent question. So our Bureau of Transportation safety officials have studied the driving behavior of those young drivers who took the waiver compared to their peers who took a road test with us throughout the duration of this pilot program. And the data is interesting. So the data actually shows that those drivers who took the waiver actually have fewer incidents of moving violations, traffic violations, and fewer incidents of crashes compared to their peers who were tested with us.
Would you like to speculate on why that may be?
You know, it's a interesting question. Great question. I think that maybe some of those drivers who weren't quite as confident or prepared for that road test, and their parent or guardian kind of had saw that in their driving behavior, had wanted them to take a test with us just to make certain that they were prepared for that. But that's just a thought. I can't say for certain why those results.
It's an interesting data point, and I appreciate it. Tommy Winkler, our guest, he is a new administrator for the Division of Motor Vehicles in Wisconsin, and you can join our conversation at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. And Tommy, why are we restarting the requirement for road tests now?
Yeah, it's a great question. So we had proposed, based upon that safety data and the positive impact we felt it had for customer convenience and service, the governor had proposed in the previous two budgets making this waiver program permanent, and that would be required. We have the authority in state law to run a pilot, but we would need a legislative change to make this program permanent. And so that was presented in the previous two budgets from the governors, but it did not make it through into the final budget. And so after it had failed to make it through this latest budget in the fall, we know we needed time to restart testing and making appointments available again. And so based upon the legislature not taking that action, we have now then moved forward to end that program at the end of this calendar year and are now offering and conducting those tests.
And what kind of skills do drivers need in order to pass this in-person road test?
Yeah, it's another good question. So when drivers go out on the road test, it's a 20-minute appointment. The test itself is about 10 to 15 minutes long, and we're going to test them on their basic operational control of the vehicle. We're looking for how they are aware and observing good driving behavior and practices, that they're checking their blind spots, that they're signaling, that they're maintaining the speed limit that is set on the roadway, and that they are demonstrating control of the vehicle. We do some backing and a Y-turn maneuver as part of the test and a parking maneuver as part of the test. So those are some of the key components of that road test to ensure that driver can safely operate that vehicle.
And Tommy, how has this test, the driver's test, evolved in recent years since you or I were taking the test and trying to pass? And what's new for this driver's test?
Yeah, you know, the components of the driver test really are, they've remained pretty consistent, pretty constant over time. The parallel parking is probably one element of that road test that you will find in many instances. We no longer require that parallel parking maneuver. But for the most part, the driver test has remained pretty consistent from when you and I took it to what it is today.
Interesting. In December, Governor Evers signed into law a new bill that provides about $6 million to pay for driver's education classes for about 15,000 low-income students. How can students qualify for this funding, Tommy?
Yeah, it's a great question. Yes, in Act 19 in the budget, $6 million were provided starting in July. At the beginning of next fiscal state fiscal year, that money will become available. And recently, Act 86, another piece of legislation, was passed and signed into law by the governor that provides some broad language about eligibility requirements. And basically, those driver's education students who would qualify for free and reduced lunch via the federal program would be eligible to receive these grants for driver education. And that those grants would be provided to driver training schools who meet the criteria that's defined in Act 86.
Have you found impediments to getting a driver's license because of the cost of driver's education, Tommy?
Well, I can't say that DMV, we have that information.
Okay.
What I can say is that, you know, this piece of legislation was passed, and now our team is tasked with, and we are currently right now working to find the most efficient, effective way to administer this driver's education grant program so that we're prepared come July when that money becomes available to begin making those grants to qualified applicants.
I guess I'd take a step back here, Tommy Winkler, and ask from the DMV's perspective, are there ways to get a driver's license without going through the driver's education classes or paying for a course?
There are. For individuals 18 years of age or older, they can come to our office and pass a knowledge and general science test and obtain an instruction permit. They have to hold that permit for at least 7 days, and then they can come and schedule a road test with us to obtain their Class D license, provided they pass that road test. So there is another path for those 18 years of age and older to obtain that probationary license.
What kind of effect can taking these driver's education classes have on overall traffic safety as you see it?
Yeah, so I there's been some studies done on the effects of driver education, and I think there have been studies that show there's a modest positive impact on driver safety and traffic safety. And I can say from our DMV data, we know that for those applicants who go through driver's education and do their 50 hours of behind the wheel practice, at least 10 of which should be during evening hours, those drivers have a higher pass rate on a road test than those drivers who maybe don't go through driver's ed and don't do that behind the wheel practice necessarily. So we have data that shows that.
We're talking about driver's licenses and other services under the umbrella of the state DMV with our guest, Tommy Winkler, the agency's top administrator. And we invite you to join us with your questions or your comments, your DMV experiences. We'll talk about that next. 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show. I'm Lee Rayburn, and our guest is the administrator of the Wisconsin Division of Motor Vehicles, Tommy Winkler. He was appointed to the position this past October, and this is your chance to share with him your DMV experience or ask him about our new rules of the road for the new year. Join us at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas at WPR.org. And Tommy, as I understand it, the Division of Motor Vehicles has made it a priority to try to reduce wait times for people at their offices. And there's a goal to have 80% of customers served within 20 minutes of a visit. So how did the DMV do with that benchmark last year?
Yeah, great question, Lee. So we have achieved that benchmark, or actually exceeded that benchmark for the entire year. Our average wait time right now for DMV service in 2023 was just around 10 and a half minutes. So we really pride ourselves in being as efficient as possible to help make that visit as short as possible for our customers that we're serving at the DMV. One thing that we've done as in DMV over the last decade, and in particular really enhanced during the COVID-19 pandemic, is providing robust online self-service options. So if you go to our website now, you're going to find a vast amount of information and online self-service options, from renewing the registration on your vehicle to replacing maybe a lost identification card or driver's license. You can title and register your vehicle on a private sale for most vehicle sales on an application that we call EMV Public. Of course, you can schedule that road test with us online as well. So really promoting and enhancing our online services has helped keep customers out of our service centers. And in doing so, then makes the wait time much shorter for those who do have to come and see us.
Yeah, but Tommy, have we seen any downside to renewing licenses and registrations via online portals as opposed to coming into the physical office?
No, I wouldn't say there are any downsides to it. It's a real-time transaction for that vehicle registration renewal. As soon as that payment is made and vehicle renewed online, that registration is valid. And we mail those certificates of registration and stickers out to customers within a week. Typically, you have that information. So we haven't seen downsides to customers serving online themselves those transactions versus coming to see us in our service centers.
Wisconsin's Division of Motor Vehicles Administrator Tommy Winkler, our guest, and we invite you to join our conversation at 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. Tommy, the state budget approved last year provided $3 million to help the division modernize its software systems. So what kind of improvements are you looking at and expecting from these upgrades?
Yeah, so the state budget did provide $3 million in funding. That funding becomes available to us on July 1st of this year. And we have started some work looking at potential software solutions from IT vendors that are really on modern technology. Our systems have been reliable and stable for many years, but they're built on old technology and old mainframe databases, and it will become increasingly difficult to find technical resources to support those systems. And so with this funding and our project to transform and modernize our IT platforms, we are going to realize greater reliability and cost savings and efficiency in maintaining the technology. And we're also looking to further enhance the functionality in our core processing system so that things are more accurate and efficient for the staff members we have who are serving customers, processing transactions, and for those customers who are using and taking advantage of our online service applications as well.
Tommy Winkler, you stepped into this role this past October. What are your goals for the agency? Where do you want to see the DMV go?
Yeah, it's an excellent question. So I think we want to continue investing in a great workforce. We have an outstanding team of employees in the Division of Motor Vehicles who come to work every day looking to serve their fellow citizens here in Wisconsin, helping those citizens obtain the products and services they're entitled to receive in a fast, friendly, and accurate manner. And so really an emphasis on how we can invest in the tools and training and environment for our folks to be able to continue to provide great service for the people in this state. I also want to see us modernize those IT systems and platforms and really continue to expand upon the online service offerings to help customers at the convenience of their time and place, serve themselves, obtain those products, services they need to receive from us going forward here. So those are some priorities for 2024 and beyond for our Division of Motor Vehicles.
Let's go to your questions for our guests now. Tommy Winkler, Administrator of the Wisconsin Division of Motor Vehicles. Kevin in Janesville, good morning.
Yes, good morning. Thanks. Say, I would love to access more services online, but the service fees far exceed mail-in for plate registrations or in-person services. Is there some way those online fees could be reduced a bit? Maybe more people would access those online versions. Thank you.
Thank you, Kevin. Tommy?
Yeah, it's a thank you for that question, Kevin. So it is true that online, if you're paying with a credit card, we do collect a credit card convenience fee to cover the cost of that transaction. However, there is an option for our online services to pay with ACH. And for those payments, there is no fee. If you come to see us for vehicle-related transactions, such as a title, there's a $5 counter service fee. And for a vehicle registration, a $3 counter service fee that we charge in addition to the cost of that product. So I think in many instances, if customers can take advantage of potentially that ACH payment option, the fees would actually be less, not to mention you're not having to take the time and spend the gas to travel to a service center to obtain that product or service.
I appreciate that. I have a going back to the waiver for 16 and 17 year olds taking the in-person driver test, which expired at the end of last year. Got an email here from Matt from Cedarburg who said he's got two teenage kids, 17 and 19, both received driver's licenses without this road test. And he says, from my perspective as a parent, it doesn't have any negative impact on the driving performance. Both kids were well prepared through a private driver training and hands-on experience. Matt goes on to say that they would not have signed off on the test waiver if they didn't think they were properly prepared and responsible drivers. Is that mirror about what you've heard and about what we've seen as a result from this waiver?
Absolutely, Lee. I think that is what Matt states is true. The important part is that these young drivers spend the time behind the wheel practicing and practicing those safe driving behaviors. They go through that driver training school program and that they are prepared to safely operate that vehicle. And we've seen that. Our sponsors, parent guardians, they're not signing off on that road test waiver unless that young driver is prepared to safely operate that vehicle. And if for some reason they had questions about that or felt they weren't prepared, that option was always available to have that young driver come and take a road test with us.
Thank you. And time for your questions with what we have left with our guest, the administrator of the Wisconsin Division of Motor Vehicles, Tommy Winkler, 1-800-642-1234. Jane and Swamico, good morning.
Yes, I'm curious if he could comment on how hard or easy it would be to add voter registration automatically to part of registering a vehicle.
Jane, thank you.
Or your driver's license.
Sure. Tommy, how hard would it be to include voter registration with getting a license or renewing it?
So, yeah, so that would require a legislative change for us to be provided the authority to automatically register voters as when they come to do transactions or business with the Division of Motor Vehicles. I think some legislation has been proposed along those lines, but it has not moved forward through the legislative process. And that would need to occur for us to automatically register voters when they come to do business with us at the Division of Motor Vehicles.
So a couple of services for the DMV or a couple of things that for the DMV would require the state legislature and the governor to sign off on. And one would be the return of this waiver for 16 and 17 year olds taking the road test. And the other one would be to get a voter registration along with getting your driver's license. Is that right?
That is correct.
Yeah. Thank you. And I want to ask you, Tommy, because we've previously talked here on the show about Wisconsin schools and bus companies struggling to recruit and retain enough school bus drivers. Does the DMV have any role in this? And is there anything they can you can do to help meet the increasing demand?
Yeah, it's an excellent question. It is a topic. We've been pretty consistent with the number of school bus drivers here in Wisconsin. We have about 14,500 licensed school bus drivers. And during the COVID-19 pandemic, there were some relaxing of some regulations from the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration. And we worked to take advantage of where we could relax some of those regulations to try and support school bus drivers obtaining that credential while also making sure transportation safety is important and that we have qualified individuals to operate those school buses. So we continue to work closely with the motor carrier and the school bus industries. And we always are looking for ways to streamline processes and eliminate obstacles for potential CDL drivers and school bus drivers so that regulations are met, but that we can help them do so in the most efficient, effective way possible to obtain that school bus endorsement. So we will continue to seek opportunities to work with the industry to do that because we know it's important. We have safe, qualified drivers for our school buses here in the state.
Yeah. Hey, Tommy, I want to thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you, Lee. I appreciate it.
Tommy Winkler is the administrator of the Wisconsin Division of Motor Vehicles. Coming up next after the news, we'll speak with a Milwaukee trial lawyer who's also an instructor of the state's Humane Officer Program. We also have your Wisconsin Life for you this morning as well. And after that, we'll take a look at what we can do for animals in need around our state and what the state's doing to help out our animals. And you can join that conversation as well at 800-642-1234. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Kate Archer-Kent this morning, and you're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. Morning Show. I'm Lee Rayburn, and coming up, we'll talk to an instructor for Wisconsin's Humane Officer Program about the evolution of animal control and how we can best help animals in need. But first, it's time for Wisconsin Life, and here's producer Maureen McCollum with a poem about coming together despite differences.
Sports have a special way of bringing a diverse group of people together, even if the fans aren't rooting for the same team. Dr. Arif Ahmed reflects on a cricket tournament in Madison where the pregame jitters were high. It wasn't necessarily because of the game itself, but because of the countries many of the players came from, India and Pakistan. The writer and cardiologist shares a poem about that day.
32 expatriates, Pakistanis and Indians, against a nuclear standoff. March 2019. For Pakistanis and Indians everywhere and in the U.S., in a week of seesaw diplomacy and unsettling war games, I am nervous. An ongoing cricket tournament in Madison, Wisconsin, USA, where Indians and Pakistanis mix up and play. Though I was nervous with more questions than answers, more doubts than convictions. Not for the game, but for the gamesmanship. Would we still come together to play or cancel and stay in our respective bubbles? And just like that, the night came and passed. We did gather and play, all trying and going out of their way to be more gracious, more generous, acutely aware of our global citizenship. This one big mother village, our interdependence, 32 expatriates, Pakistanis and Indians, against the odds, playing cricket over war, choosing team play, and maintaining discourse. Talking with a bat and a ball, we played for peace, yes, peace for all.
Dr. Arif Ahmed of Madison shared that writing about finding harmony through a game of cricket in Madison. After recording his poem, he told me a bit more about his love of cricket.
Well, growing up, this is a sport which has been around the longest. And you know who taught us cricket? The English. When British ruled over subcontinent India and Pakistan, they brought cricket with, and that's how they taught us cricket.
What do you love about the sport?
It's a good sport. It's a fair sport. It gives you a good balance. It's an English version of baseball, and I just like it. I never thought about why I loved it. Yeah, this is the first time I'm thinking about why do I love cricket. Well, I just like it.
So can you talk about the day of this cricket tournament and why it inspired you to write this poem?
So this was a time of a tense standoff between India and Pakistan, who are both neighbors and both are nuclear armed. And we were playing this tournament here, and it was a tense time. It was all over the international news because these two nuclear armed nations are at each other's throat and not backing off. So That's when this piece came about. And the more I think about it, the more I realize that religion, race, region, how can we fight over these things which we don't choose but are born into? And another important concept which I bring out is peace for all. You know, it's a very basic, just like a good air, good quality water. Peace for all is a very basic human need.
Dr. Arif Ahmed is a writer and cardiologist from Madison. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook and Instagram. I'm Maureen McCollum.
It's the morning show. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Kate Archer Kent. Now, to become certified humane officer in Wisconsin, you must complete a 40-hour course that covers crime scene procedure, rules of evidence, courtroom testimony, and the role of animal investigators, among other things. So this morning, we're learning more about the role of these unique officers in our state. And you can be part of our conversation by calling in with your questions or your thoughts, your experiences, 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can always email us anytime, ideas@WPR.org. Joe Good is a Milwaukee trial lawyer and an instructor for the state's Humane Officer Program. And Joe, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Lee. Thanks for having me.
So if I were interested in becoming a humane officer, what sort of prior experience would I need to bring to the table?
Well, actually, you don't have to have any. I think an interest in compassion for animals would start. Every municipality in this state can, and if it wishes to, create a humane officer program, appoint humane officers. And the way you do it is you go through the program with the state, as you described in the intro. Spend a week, take some tests, and then you are a certified officer.
Yeah, humane officer training is a 40-hour course once a year in September. You see 40 hours as sufficient enough to train humane officers?
Well, I would say compared to where we were prior to the enactment of the statute in 1999, the answer would be yes. Obviously, these folks undergo ongoing training, and the idea is to expose them to the various things that they're going to encounter in the field. One of the things to appreciate, Lee, is that the statute, Chapter 173 of our state law, provides not just the certification requirements for humane officers, but the rules for the road, right? So this is dealing with how animals are seized, how they're investigated, if they are seized, how they're maintained in custody, and then ultimately how they're disposed of, you know, in terms of transfers back to owners, transfers to the public, and so on and so forth.
So what's it like to be a humane officer? What's the experience like? Is there no 2 days the same?
Well, and I'm not a humane officer, so I want to be clear about that. I'm a mere trial lawyer from Milwaukee. but I've spent a lot of time with humane officers, and I spent 15 years on the board of directors of an animal shelter up in Madison, the Dane County Humane Society. So I know a little bit about, you know, the experiences these folks go through. And in any given day, this statute is really driving the idea of animal welfare in our state. OK, the idea is to use some carrot and sticks, right, to ensure that animal cruelty isn't ongoing. If there are issues with the way animals are being treated, humane officers have a toolbox, if you will, to be able to address concerns with animal welfare using abatement orders, investigating animal complaints, ensuring, you know, the balance is struck between an owner treating an animal a certain way and, you know, the owner's rights vis-a-vis that animal, but also ensuring the animal's safety in the process.
Joe Good, instructor for the state's Humane Officer Program, our guest, and you can call in with your questions or thoughts at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. There's one thing that humane officers can't do, Joe, and that's the arrest someone like police officers can. So what's the relationship like between humane officers and police and district attorneys? Sure. and the legal system?
Sure. So the statute, Chapter 173, which I referenced earlier, is really designed twofold. It's a certification program for people who are not law enforcement, who want to work in this space to become humane officers. Every municipality in this state, as I said, can appoint a humane officer. They have to go through the program. But as you said, humane officers have limited authority with respect to things. You can't arrest somebody and so forth. The statute speaks, though, directly to law enforcement. In other words, law enforcement officers, they need not go through the certification program, although we spend a lot of time trying to encourage them to do so because animal intake, animal investigations are different than other criminal investigations. So the idea is to get them familiar with that program. But typically, what we see in a lot of communities is humane officers and law enforcement working hand in hand, particularly on more egregious situations.
So what are some of the challenges that we see in terms of determining whether or not a crime has been committed against these animals?
Well, I mean, you know, the largest part of it is being able to get access, right,
yeah,
to what's going on. Sometimes complaints are drawn from third parties. Sometimes, you know, there might be a situation with a family where one person is reporting abuse. Sometimes they make the radar simply because they're known. We have seen situations, particularly with large-scale hoarding situations, which sometimes we read about in the papers, where things are really getting out of hand. People start to report. Perhaps a file is opened and an investigation is undertaken.
I ask you to put your trial lawyer hat on here, Joe Gooden. From that perspective, are the rules strong enough for the protection of animals in Wisconsin as you see it?
Well, I'm a little bit of a cynic. I do a lot of teaching in this space. And my only reason for that is that I look at this statute and I look at the rules and the idea, the concept of animal control as a public need, no different than picking up the trash, you know, and plowing the streets in the winter. In other words, it's something that every community, every city, every village, every town, every county should embrace. What I have experienced is a broad array of responses to animal control and the need to invest. There's always the resource issue, right? Mm-hmm. We see this all the time with respect to, you know, the elevation, the triaging of what's a crime. There is data, Lee, national data that suggests that people who are engaged in animal crimes, that there's always an association with other crimes, human crimes and the like. And so one of the things I constantly try to talk about is let's invest more in preserving animal welfare in the state, working on these things to try to make our communities safer.
Joe Good, an instructor for the state's Humane Officer Program, and you can call in with your questions or thoughts at 800-642-1234, where Kathleen in Madison is standing by. Kathleen, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for doing this. It means a lot to me. Recently, I did my estate, and I wanted to donate to this cause, and I don't know where the best money lobbyist or someplace that I could do that would be able to change these type of laws to support against animal cruelty.
Kathleen, it's thank you so much for the question. And Joe, what would you say? How can she donate to help these animals and alleviate their suffering?
Sure. So a couple things. First of all, I think that actually the existing laws on the books, there's a number of them that govern animal welfare in this state. Chapter 951 deals with crimes. Chapter 174 deals with dogs. Chapter 95 deals with rabies and so forth. There's plenty of laws, frankly, on the books. The encouragement that I wish for everybody is the resource development at the implementation and the enforcement of those laws, which again is broad-based. In some communities, very viable, very active, very engaged, and in others, not as much. With respect to Kathleen's estate wishes, you know, one of the things I would recommend is you find an animal shelter that you care about and you think about putting them in your estate plan. They work hand in hand, oftentimes with municipalities, sometimes under contract, serving as the stray and seizure holding facilities. And so the best way to help implement is to help those shelters out, because it is not a cheap endeavor to take on these animals and care for them during their periods of stay.
And that has been part of your service as well, as you worked with Animal Shelter in Dane County, Joe, as I understand it.
That's correct. The Dane County Humane Society.
Joe Good, instructor for the state's Humane Officer Program. And we invite you to join our conversation about what more we can do to help animals in need in our community. 800-642-1234. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show. I'm Lee Rayburn, and our guest is Joe Good, a Milwaukee trial lawyer and an instructor for the state's Humane Officer Program, and we're talking about how to best help animals in distress and what Wisconsin laws say about how we can protect them. And we invite you to the conversation, 800-642-1234, if you have a question for Joe. And Joe, I have a question for you in terms of if I were to see what I might think or worry could be some form of animal abuse or neglect, what would my role be just as a concerned citizen?
So you have a couple options. Obviously, you certainly can and should probably call the police to advise. If you are in a community that does have an appointed humane officer, their information is going to be a public record, and I suggest you start with that person. One of the benefits of the Humane Officer Program that the state created in 1999 is to get people versed in animal cruelty investigations. It's different, right? Every crime is different, but imagine, Lee, having a situation where you have a multitude of people involved, various interests involved, the owner, various communities, there's a financial piece of this, but how you go about investigating an animal crime is you got to open a door somewhere. And so if you have a complaint, I would suggest it be made to law enforcement, or if there's an appointed humane officer, to that person directly so they can investigate, open a file, and decide what to do.
Do you see gray areas when it comes to the law deciding that there is abuse or neglect happening when it comes to an animal, Joe?
I suppose there are arguments to be made in the situations that I've been involved in, and I've done some work legally for various shelters and municipalities, you know, in what I'll call large-scale seizures. And we're talking, Lee, you know, 60 animals, 100 animals that have been, you know, placed in a situation either because of a hoarding environment or in sometimes we've done some large dogfighting cases as well. Those cases are a little clearer. There was a story that came out, I think, 2 days ago in Madison about a woman who starved a dog to death, which was reported in the Wisconsin State Journal. You know, that's a clear case. Sure, there are times where the defense will be, well, we were trying to take care of this animal or these animals, and there might be some gray area. So we try to encourage humane officers and law enforcement who are doing this work is you approach it like everything. You investigate, and it should be driven by facts, not emotions or a personality over what you think should or should not occur. Let the facts take you to the conclusion. But oftentimes in these more severe cases, it does appear that they are somewhat cut and dried.
That's Joe Good, Milwaukee-based trial lawyer and humane officer instructor for the state. And there's still time for your questions and comments about our animals. 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Mike in Milwaukee, good morning.
Hi. You know, I've been thinking about this lately because of after COVID, everybody had their COVID animals. And then when COVID wasn't a problem, they dropped them off at the local animal shelter, and they're overwhelmed with these animals. So I'm wondering if there can't be a national campaign. LBJ's wife, Lady Bird Johnson, started the Make America Beautiful campaign. They had the Native American with a tear coming down his eye, looking at all the trash along the road. And that campaign was pretty effective in getting people's attention about littering. There's also the anti-smoking campaign that I believe helped a lot of people quit smoking and educated young people to the health hazards of smoking.
And you would Mike, you would put the mistreatment or neglect of animals on the same level as these national campaigns.
Yeah, it should be a national shaming campaign. so that
You know, and to, I mean, these are living animals, and it's beings, and they're this goes beyond. It's in other words, it's not endangering your own life.
Yeah, but, Mike, I appreciate where you're coming from, and I thank you for your compassion. And Joe, I turn it over to you. What more can we do to raise awareness for empathy towards animals, and how the more you get to know them, the more you realize, you know, they're not so different than us.
Sure. No, I mean, it's a great statement, Mike, and I really do appreciate your passion toward the topic. And I think he's 100% right. Awareness is a big part of it. I mean, we have an abundance of animals in this country, frankly, in this world. There is overpopulation. You know, most of the shelter practices, standard practices today are when animals are adopted out, you know, they have been essentially fixed, so that we can avoid those types of issues. But at the end of the day, you know, if we're doing our job right, we're never going to have an animal shelter need. But the problem is humans get involved and humans act with respect to animals in certain ways. And as Mike points out, a lot of people take on animals, not understanding the obligations that are associated with it, financial and otherwise. And eventually they're like, well, we don't want to do this. And they wind up back in a shelter environment. So greater awareness, understanding of the aspects of what it means to own an animal, I think is really, really important. Shelters do a lot of work in that space when they're adopting out animals to ensure that a would-be owner understands the obligation. Unfortunately, you know, society has proved over time that cruelty is going to be a thing. It's always going to be a thing, regrettably and sadly. And there are these very egregious situations that we need to act on.
Joe, to Mike's point here, in 2022, the Wisconsin Humane Society reported receiving nearly 13,000 cats and dogs. About 5,000 of those animals were stray. For folks who find strays in their community, what's the best thing they can do?
Bring it to your local Humane Society. They are equipped to deal with it. If the animal is behaviorally suited and healthy, and they will work very much on both of those concepts, assuming the animal is truly a stray, and stray is defined in the law as unclaimed and unowned after a period of 4 days, that animal will eventually find a home. All of these shelters, the Wisconsin Humane Society, being in my hometown, are wonderful organizations, and they're very, very empathetic, and they are designed and set up to take those animals in. So the best thing you can do is take them there, and they will find good and loving homes.
And the next training session for our Humane Officer program would be this coming September?
Right, that's correct. So for people who are interested in exploring the idea of becoming a Humane Officer or advocating in their community to become one and obtain an appointment from their governing body, I would suggest that you reach Dr. Yvonne Belay at the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection here in Madison, who runs the program and the certification requirements around it.
Joe, thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you, Lee. I appreciate it.
Joe Good, Milwaukee trial lawyer and an instructor for the state's Humane Officer Program. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.